It's been a while. It's appropriate that it's pie night tonight, because it's my mom's birthday. I won't make everyone sing. I know they all sang earlier and stuff, but yeah, wish her a happy birthday today. If you haven't already, 1 Samuel chapter 29 is where we are at. And I want to begin this evening with a little story. I don't do this very often. I think it's appropriate, though. Maybe it's just appropriate for me. But you're along for the ride, so this is based on what we're going to see tonight. I wanted to share this with you. A little lamb and his mother passed by this pig pen every single day on their way to their green pastures. And this little lamb, is every day as they would pass by, he would look longingly at the pigs wallowing in the mud. And he asked his mother if he could go play with them. It looked like fun. He had no understanding of such an activity. But she simply said to him, "No, sheep don't wallow." But each day as they would walk by, he'd look over that fence and he'd look at those pigs in the mud, and it looked like so much fun. And on a hot day, that mud looked so cool. So one day when he was older, he let his mother go on just, you know, a little bit ahead of him. And he jumped over that fence and he started playing in the mud. And it was a hot day. And that cool mud, it felt wonderful on his ankles as he started stepping into it. So he went in a little bit deeper. And finally, he got up to his belly and he was feeling so much cooler now. But mud and wool don't mix real well, do they? And it began to cake and it began to harden on his wool until he realized he was stuck. He couldn't get himself out. No matter how hard he struggled, he was stuck in that mud. His momentary pleasure had actually become a prison. He began to cry out for help. And finally, the farmer came and pulled him out and took him back to the pasture. And when his mother saw him with his wool all darkened and tangled with mud, she simply repeated, "Sheep don't wallow." Now, I suspect, based on some of your expressions, that you already know where I'm going with this. You already know what this story is about. As children of God, we are not meant to wallow in the mud of sin, are we? We absolutely are not. Oh, I get it. It may look appealing. There are times when it looks really appealing, but guys, remember where it leads. Remember where it always leads. It traps, it addicts, it enslaves, it destroys. All of which requires us then to be rescued, doesn't it? Rescued from the muck and the mire that we have been wallowing in. Now, I bring this up tonight, guys, because chapters 29 and 30 of 1 Samuel are all about God rescuing David from his sins, his lies, his backslidden condition, if you will, where he had found himself trapped while wallowing and living for himself. Now in chapter 29, which is going to be our main focus tonight, as you can see from your outlines, God, like the farmer in our story, rescues David from himself, from the mud pit that he had trapped himself in with the Philistines because of his deception and refusal to trust that God would take care of him. Whereas in chapter 30, which is what we're going to focus on that in a couple weeks. Next week, Josh is actually going to be teaching for me as I'm convalescing. So in a couple weeks, when we get to chapter 30, God doesn't merely rescue David from himself. He is also going to rescue David's heart. Think about it. It's one thing to extricate someone from the trap, from the mud, from the sin. But if you don't change their heart, what are they going to just keep doing? Jumping the fence and going right back to the mud. And I have a feeling some of us, myself included, have been in that place before. So over the last couple chapters, David's heart has in many ways wandered from God. He's seemingly lost interest in following God, and instead he's just relying on his own plans, his own ideas, his own wisdom instead. And I think the picture is the same. He had been enticed by that cool-looking mud on the other side of the fence. Well, God in His grace is going to break him free from that. And He's going to bring his heart home. But let me first remind you what we have seen in recent chapters. Okay? Back in chapter 27, I remember David was at the end of his rope. He is exhausted, right? After years of constantly being on the run, being hunted by King Saul, who's always wanting to take David's life. So in desperation, no longer wanting to rely on God's protection in Israel, what did David do? He decided to put his own plan into effect, right? He decided to basically hide amongst the Philistines. The Philistines who were the enemy of God's people. That was David's plan. That was David's wonderful plan for his life. Unfortunately, it was in rebellion against God's plan for his life. God had said, I want you in Israel. I don't want you going to Moab. I don't want you going to the land of the Philistines. I want you to be in Israel. And so, unfortunately, it seemed for a while that this was working. The mud feels good for a little while, right? It looked like he had some rest from Saul as he was hiding out amongst the Philistines. But it came at a high price. His character was compromised. Anytime, guys, that we disobey the Lord and choose our own path, our character is going to be impacted by it. You see, to live amongst the Philistines, David basically had to become a double agent. And I know that's really cool in spy movies, okay? Not so cool for followers of Jesus Christ, because you have to lie. Your whole life is a lie. And David had to pretend to be loyal to Achish. Remember him? He's the Philistine king. While trying to remain loyal to Israel. David's life every day was just one lie and deception after another. Matter of fact, as you might remember, he was so committed to deception that he began killing anyone who could reveal his secret. Those villages, those Amalekite villages that were within Philistine lands, he began wiping them out and killing every last person in it so that none of them could tell the king what was going on. So, that deception worked so well that when the Philistines finally decided to go to war with Israel, Achish, the king of Gath, forcibly enlisted David and his men to be his personal bodyguards in the battle. David and his men are now going to have to go to war against the people of God. So, when we left David at the end of chapter 27, that was his trap. He had done what he wanted to do. It looked fun. Fun's probably not the right word, but it worked. It was working. Saul's leaving me alone. But as always happens when we stray from God's path, we end up in a trap. And so did David. He had always been so committed to never raising his hand against the Lord's anointed, Saul, right? He wouldn't touch him. Now he's forcibly enlisted to fight a war against who? Saul. He either had to join the Philistines and fight Saul in Israel or blow his cover and risk death at the hands of his new Philistine friends. David is trapped in the mud that he willingly ran into. So, how does he get out of this? How does he extricate himself? Can he get himself out? Well, chapter 27 kind of left us hanging without an answer. Our story picks up tonight where we left off with David being enlisted in that army. And since chapters 29 and 30 are both about God graciously rescuing David when he wandered from the Lord, we're going to build both of those studies this week and in 2 weeks around the same question that you see at the top of your outlines. How does God show grace to the backslidden? How does God show grace to those who have turned away, who have walked away from walking with the Lord? And the first answer to that question, guys, is going to be answered for us tonight in chapter 29. It is our focus this evening, okay? So how does God show grace to the backslidden? Well, God first saves us from ourselves. Read verse 1 with me. Now, the Philistines gathered together all their armies to Aphek, while the Israelites were camping by the spring, which is in Jezreel. So, got two nations, both of them preparing for war, okay, is our picture here. But the first thing that I want you guys to notice is that the Philistines gathered together how many of their armies for war? Did you notice that? Yeah, all their armies. Guys, this was not about to be some minor border skirmish, which there were bunches of those between Israel and the Philistines. No, this was going to be a full-on massive war with no military units left behind at all. And in fact, the very thing that they did here, leaving no protection behind for their own land, that's actually going to become important later when we get into chapter 30, okay? But the mention of all of the Philistine forces gathering at Aphek almost certainly would have sent chills down the spines of every Israelite who heard about it. Because, guys, the last time that Aphek was mentioned in this book, it was all the way back in chapter 4. That's a lot of years ago. I don't mean our time, obviously. That's a long time previous to this time in 1 Samuel. But at Aphek, the Philistines fought the Israelites, defeating them decisively. As a matter of fact, it is there that the Philistines captured the Ark of God. Do you guys remember us looking at that earlier in this book? It is there that the Philistines killed the two sons of Eli, the high priest. This was a time of complete humiliation for the Israelites. So the mention of an all-out major Philistine offensive starting at Aphek kind of gives you a bit of this eerie feeling that history is about to repeat itself. And given what we just read last week, what Samuel told Saul, that tomorrow you will what? Die. It sounds like this is not going to go well. Now, for the last year and a half or so, instead of trusting and obeying God, David, as I said, had taken matters into his own hands, lying and deceiving every step of the way. He's hiding amongst the Philistines. He's lied to Achish, the Philistine king, telling him, hey, I'm attacking all these Israelite villages for you, and I'm bringing all the spoils back to you. But do you remember what he was really doing? He's attacking villages that were within the Philistine lands and bringing those spoils to Achish, right? So basically, for a year and a half, David has lied to everyone. Now his men are being forcibly enlisted in the Philistine army. How's he going to get out of this? Well, there's great news here, obviously. The God who saved David from Goliath, right? The God who saved David from King Saul over a dozen times already would have to save David himself. More importantly, he'd have to save David from himself because David's made an incredible mess of his life. Now, guys, I am emphasizing this because this has been true of me more times than I would care to admit. Anybody else been there before? where you are a follower of Jesus Christ, you believe, you're a Christian, you are saved, but you are choosing the mud. You're choosing the sin. You're choosing to walk away. And you've decided to live by your own strength, your own rules, your own wisdom. And that makes a mess of things, doesn't it? Every single time. So, if you're like me, then the rest of this chapter is for you and me. This is important stuff for us to understand. Let's see how God comes to David's rescue. Verse 2. And the lords of the Philistines were proceeding on by hundreds and by thousands, and David and his men were proceeding on in the rear with Achish. Then the commanders of the Philistines said, "What are these Hebrews doing here?" That seems like a reasonable question at this point, right? And Achish said to the commanders of the Philistines, "Is this not David, the servant of Saul, the king of Israel, who has been with me these days, or rather, these years? And I have found no fault in him from the day he deserted to me to this day." Now, as you might remember from a previous study, the Philistine nation was ruled by five kings who kind of ruled over city-states, five major cities that were in the Philistine area. And these five kings basically served, like the board of directors, I guess, kind of, right? They set policy for the Philistines. So before the Philistine army headed north to go fight Israel, this assembly of troops at Aphek was so that the Philistine kings and their commanders and so forth could inspect them as they marched in front of them. You've probably seen this kind of stuff in movies before, right? But that's what we have pictured here. And the very last of the troops to come by the Philistine kings were King Achish's troops. And then after King Achish's troops, you had David and his men at the very back. Personally, I'm just guessing that Achish kind of set it up this way so that the Philistine kings would be so exhausted by the end of their inspection that they wouldn't notice, that they just let David and his men through at the end. Obviously, that is not what happened. When the Philistine kings saw David and his men marching with them, they were furious. They're not taking this lightly. They obviously did not want them to be part of the battle because they were Israelites. I mean, that makes sense, right? Now, obviously, Achish thought that he could just explain David and his men away, right? Tell his fellow four kings, "Hey, they're not working for Saul anymore. They're with me now," right? "They're proven mercenaries. They're working for the highest bidder. They're with us." As a matter of fact, I don't know if you noticed, but Achish actually even stretches the truth here, saying that David has been with him for years. David's only been with him for about 16 months or so at this point. So even Achish is feeling a little bit of heat from his decision to bring David and his men with him. But while David had successfully deceived Achish, the other Philistine kings are not so easily convinced. And they actually give Achish two reasons why they did not want David and his men with them in battle. The first reason was simply, it's some obvious wisdom with war, right? Look at verse 4. "But the commanders of the Philistines were angry with him, and the commanders of the Philistines said to him, 'Make the man go back, that he may return to his place where you have assigned him, and do not let him go down to battle with us, or in the battle he may become an adversary to us. For with what could this man make himself acceptable to his Lord? Would it not be with the heads of these men?'" And of course, they're pointing at the Philistine soldiers in front of them. So while they were battling the Israelites in front of them, the last thing they wanted was a group of Israelites attacking them from the back, who were part of their own group. David and his men may have defected to the Philistines, but if they ever wanted to get back in King Saul's good graces, what's the best way to do it? Oh yeah, turn on the Philistines in the midst of the war, right? Start fighting them. And this makes sense, right? This is reasonable logic that the Philistine kings here are giving. David and his men, as part of this war, it's not smart. It's really not smart. Now, the second reason they didn't want David and his men in this battle came from history. You see, apparently, everyone knew the song that the Israelites used to sing about David. Apparently, it was trending, you know? It was like top of the charts or whatever, but everyone knew about it. The women of Israel, of course, they remember, began singing it back in chapter 18 after David had killed the Philistine giant Goliath. And according to verse 5, these kings have not forgotten the song. They can quote it. Look what it says there. Is this not David of whom they sing in the dances, saying Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000? So, hey Achish, have you entirely forgotten who this guy is? They say that he's killed tens of thousands of people. Oh, and by the way, most of those people were Philistines. And now you want to bring him along with us. They're absolutely right. Right? This is way too big of a risk to let David come into battle with them. Now, what happens next here makes me laugh a little bit. I find it mildly humorous. You see, for the last 16 months, David has been lying to King Achish, right? Deceiving him, fooling him into thinking that they're on the same side. When in reality, all those spoils that he's been bringing up to Achish, they're from Achish's own people, right? I mean, it's not from the Israelites at all. Not to mention that David then slaughtered all the people in those villages, so that they wouldn't go and tell Achish what was really going on. So it's kind of ironic to see how apologetically Achish asks David to go home. Look at verse 6. Then Achish called David and said to him, "As the Lord lives, you have been upright, and your going out and your coming in with me in the army are pleasing in my sight. For I have not found evil in you from the day of your coming to me to this day. Nevertheless, you are not pleasing in the sight of the Lord's. Now therefore, return and go in peace, that you may not displease the lords of the Philistines." Now, the reason I find this ironic is because the truth is David has been anything but upright. He has been anything but honest. Achish may not have found anything wrong with David, but that was only because David's really good at lying, right? He's really good at deceiving. He's good at living a double life. And guys, there's a really uncomfortable lesson from what we're seeing here. Are we ever like David, really good at living a double life? I think you know what I mean, right? Right at church, everyone thinks you're wonderful, right? You're a fine, upstanding follower of Jesus. But in reality, your life looks a lot different than that when you're not around your church friends or at church, right? Maybe you're constantly lying to people, deceiving them about what you're really like. I have been there before, okay? Don't think I'm just pointing fingers at any of you, because I don't know all of this about you. I know it about me, though. Okay? But maybe you've been there too. But as you can see, that was David as well. Now, God in His grace, He's going to break David of that double life. God is faithful to His children, man. In the very next chapter, we're going to see that. It's going to be painful. Okay? God's discipline is always painful. Otherwise, it's not discipline. So the thing to know is that, yeah, David successfully fooled Achish. But who was David not fooling? Exactly. He wasn't fooling God. David could have fooled everybody on the face of the planet, but he would have never fooled God. And while Achish's words show us the level of deception that David was able to achieve over this king, these are also words that David desperately wanted to hear. You know? You see, guys, in these words of Achish in verses 6 and 7, and because those Philistine kings did not trust David and kicking him out of the army at the last minute, right before the battle, God just saved David, didn't he? Guys, you realize that what we just read there in Achish's words is God pulling David out of the mud from the mess that he had made in his life. And here we see that sometimes God, in the undeserved grace that he often shows us, saves us from ourselves and the consequences of our dumb, sinful choices. I could regale you with stories for the whole rest of this evening of how God rescued me over and over again from my own stupidity, my own sinful choices, my own choice to backslide, to run after the mud. And every time, God came and rescued me. It didn't always happen the next day. God's pretty gentlemanly. He'll let us run with our choices for a little bit until our wool's trapped in the mud and we can't get out. But that's what we see here. Maybe some of you have those stories too, where God's rescued you from the consequences of your lies, your deceptions, your unfaithfulness, and the resulting mess that it made. Guys, did David deserve to be saved here, to be rescued? No. He wasn't even asking to be rescued. I'm pretty certain that at no point here along this timeline that we're reading was David going, "Oh my gosh, what are you going to do? Oh God, please come and get me." I don't think that's what was happening. Okay? But God was so kind and gracious that he saved David anyway. And what I also appreciate here is how God saved David from the mess. God used the enemy to save David from himself. Isn't that a kick? Right? God was in charge of the hearts of the wicked Philistine rulers. He's the one that tapped him on the shoulder and said, "Hey, did you notice the Jews all wandering around at the back of your army here?" They didn't miss it at all. And I believe fully that God was behind that. And you know, often God saves us from the mess we've made with our lives in ways we would never expect. Ways we couldn't possibly imagine. This is the undeserved grace of God at work in our lives. Now, when David was told that he wouldn't be allowed to fight his fellow Israelites, we might expect him just to start dancing, you know. You know, we might expect maybe at least a little sly grin, you know, or something like that. That is not the reaction we see from David. Look at verse 8. David said to Achish, "But what have I done? And what have you found in your servant from the day when I came before you to this day, that I may not go out and fight against the enemies of my lord, the king?" Why does David protest here? He just got off scot-free, right? He just got out of the trap. So where's the thankfulness for getting out of the jam at the last second? Well, I think there are two possible reasons for this reaction. One is that David knows at this point there is no chance he's going to be called to the battlefield. But if he acted with excitement, if he, you know, danced a little jig right there in front of the Philistines, the deception's all over, isn't it? That carefully crafted lie that's been going on for the last 16 months would be over. Cover would be blown, and most likely David and all of his men and all of their families would be put to death. So instead of being excited, he acted like he was disappointed. Now, others believe that David's disappointment for not being allowed to fight was not merely an ongoing part of his deception of Achish, but it was a genuine disappointment. In other words, it is possible that the Philistine kings actually stumbled upon David's plan here. David did want to be in the rear during the battle so he could turn on the Philistines during the fight. Now, we don't know exactly what his intentions are. Either one of those could be possible, right? It doesn't really matter what his reason was. The point is that we see God graciously rescuing David from the mess he had made, and David did not deserve it. David did not deserve it. In fact, as far as we know, and none of the Psalms back us up in this regard or anything like that, David doesn't even thank God for it. Have you ever been there? Has God ever rescued you from the mess you made of your life by unexpectedly just closing a door? You're headed headlong. I'm headed headlong in the direction that I want to go in. And God in His grace just goes, no. And refuses to allow me or you or David to go any further. It's not because we're on our knees begging God for rescue. It's not because we are faithfully following Him as we should be. It's simply because God chose. I want you guys to see this reality of who our God is in this story and in our lives. Of course, now you look back on it and you see God's hand of protection. I've got to have conversations with many of you about your past where you have shared with me, you know, this, and this happened, and now I see God was protecting me. Some of you have even shared with me, I wasn't even a Christian yet, and God protected me because He knew I would be His one day, right? That is our God. But at the time, when your heart was hard, when what you wanted was what you wanted, you had no idea how good God was being to you. And I kind of think David didn't fully appreciate what God was doing here. Which leads us tonight to Achish's final response to David there in verse 9. Remember, David had said, why can't I fight? Right? If you found something bad in me, maybe his guilt was coming out with David. You know, did you discover something about me? You know, whatever. But look at how Achish replies here. I know that you are pleasing in my sight, like an angel of God. Nevertheless, the commanders of the Philistines have said he must not go up with us to the battle. Now then, arise early in the morning with your servants, with the servants of your Lord who have come with you, and as soon as you have risen early in the morning and have light, depart. Now, again, this is unbelievably ironic, right? Achish was apologizing to David that he couldn't give him a chance to fight in the battle. Achish says that he thought David was blameless, like an angel of God. What guys talk like that anyway? But nonetheless, that's what they're doing. David had Achish seriously fooled, did he not? Absolutely. But in reality, David was a liar. He was a deceiver. And verse 11 says, so David arose early, he and his men, to depart in the morning to return to the land of the Philistines, and the Philistines went up to Jezreel. So, the Philistines leave to go fight the Israelites in Jezreel, and David and his men, they head on back to Ziklag, the village that Achish had given them. Do you guys see how God graciously rescued a backslidden David? Right? Now, you might think that's the end of the story. It isn't. Okay? Yeah, God rescued David from the mud he'd gotten himself stuck in. But God doesn't merely extricate us from our bad circumstances. He also takes the opportunity, as I said before, to discipline us, to change our hearts so that the next time we do not gleefully jump the fence and run headlong into the mud. We've seen God rescue David, but in chapter 30, we're going to see God rescue David's heart. It's one thing to get David out of his physical circumstance. It's another to change his heart. So guys, what do we see here? What do we see here in this story of David? As we close here, let me just remind us of three things. Three things I want to reiterate here that we can take from this chapter. And the first is something I've mentioned numerous times. God's grace saves us from ourselves. God's grace saves us from ourselves. David looked at the difficulties of his life, right? They were exhausting. They were seemingly never ending when he was in Israel. He never had a moment's peace. They're living in caves. He's having to feed upwards of 1,000 people or more. It's exhausting. And then he looked over the fence where the Philistines lived, and things looked a whole lot better over there. Even though he knew better, even though he knew that God's people were not to wallow with the pagans around them, the seeming security and peace on the other side looked too attractive. And so David's choosing not to trust in God, to not trust in God's promises, even in the midst of David's trials, choosing instead to rely on lies and sin and deception, sunk David in the muck and mire, made a complete mess of his life. But despite all of that, just as God saved David from the Philistines and King Saul, God also graciously saved David from himself. I love that this is who our God is. Please understand, guys, I know I've said it before, but David did not deserve to be saved by God. He did not. At this point, he's still in the middle of turning his back on God, still living his life his own way, left God behind. Yet God still loved David. He was precious to God. Even though this is what David's doing, God still loved him, and God still saved him from the mess that he had made of his world. And guys, as I said, I am a testimony to the fact that God still works this way with his children, with those who belong to him. If God had not rescued me from my own self-inflicted mud pits before I had ever called out to him for rescue, I would not be here tonight sharing any of this with you. It is only because of him. And so I don't know what kind of a mess you've made of your life tonight. Maybe this is just reaffirmation of what God has already done in your life, or maybe you find yourself knee deep in the mud right now. I don't know how far away from God you've walked. I don't know how backslidden you are in your faith, but what you need to know tonight is that God still loves you. We desperately need to believe that and understand that. In fact, he loves you so much that even when you don't care about him, even when you have turned away from him many times, he is still rescuing you and protecting you from the consequences of your dumb, sinful choices. Does that sound like love to any of you? It does to me. This is the heart of the great shepherd toward his sheep. Can I share with you what Jesus said about that? Matthew chapter 18, verses 11 through 14. Jesus said, "The Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was what?" Okay, sounds like it's what we're talking about tonight, isn't it? He continues, "What do you think? If any man has 100 sheep, and one of them has gone astray, does he not leave the 99 on the mountains and go to search for the one that's missing? If it turns out that he finds it, truly I say to you, he rejoices over it more than over the 99 which have not gone astray. So it is not the will of your Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. You are one of his little ones. So am I. And my point here, guys, is even if you have turned away from God, he has not turned away from you. That is not the heart or the will of the Father. He still loves you. He is still graciously pursuing you. So turn back to him if you've strayed. Stay on this side of the fence if you haven't, okay? Because children of God don't wallow, all right? A second thing that I want you guys to take from this chapter is that God's grace saves us in unexpected ways. I mean, who would have guessed in a million years that the way God would save David from having to fight against King Saul and fight against his fellow countrymen was by having the Philistine kings kick him out of the army minutes before the battle began? Who would have ever guessed that one? The Philistines, the enemies of God's people, were being used for God's good purposes. I'm sorry, I get a kick out of that. And they don't even know it. At no point did the Philistines go, "Oh, God's using us to help." And no, that never happened. But God was working behind the scenes on the behalf of one of his little ones, David. And when we've made a muddy mess of our lives and we see no way out, what we do not know is that God, who loves us, who is incredibly gracious to us, has a million surprising ways to rescue us that you and I could never imagine. This reminds me of that verse that Solomon wrote, the Proverb 21, chapter 21, verse 1. He says, "The king's heart is a stream of water in the hand of the Lord. He turns it wherever he will." There's something for you to think about, guys, right? When we're complaining about politics and stuff, right? God has no limitations. Whether it's the course of a nation or the life of one of his little ones, God has complete control. This is the all-powerful God we serve, the sovereign God that we serve. And that is why we don't lose hope. That is why. I know when we've reaped the consequences of our own sin and backslidden choices, it can feel like there's no way out. There is no possibility for rescue. We may even be convinced that even if there was, God surely wouldn't rescue us after we've hopped the fence once again. But our sovereign great shepherd is faithful even when we are faithless. 2 Timothy 2:13. He remains faithful even when we are faithless. Why? Because he cannot deny his name. He cannot deny himself. And he has already declared you as one of his little ones. So expect God to pursue you. If you are right now walking where you should be walking, rejoice in this reality of God. If you are not, expect God to pursue you. Expect God to find you. Okay. At that point, it sounds like a threat, doesn't it? Right? God's saying, "I got a special set of skills and I will hunt you." No, I mean, but God will hunt you down. He will pursue you. Why? To rescue you. Because he loves you. Okay? One last thing. Okay? One last thing I want to leave you with tonight. We haven't really talked about this too much tonight. It's something that's been bouncing around in my heart. And a lot of it didn't really come together for me as to why it was there until our men's Bible study this morning in, of all books, the Song of Solomon. But one last thing I want to leave you guys with. God's grace does not give up on us no matter how far we have gone. Okay? God's grace does not give up on us no matter how far we have gone. Now, I understand that it is our tendency to make God in our own image, right? And so we might, you know, think in our own heads, well, if this is the way I see it, right? If this is the way I feel about it, then that must be the way God sees things. That must be the way God feels about things. For instance, you might look at somebody who you see him and their wool is all darkened and caked with mud, right? And you look at him and go, "Oh, just give up on that person, man. Why did they make that stupid choice? Why are they fooling around in that mud? Let them fry, right? Let them get what they deserve." Do we not sometimes go to such places? We do. And then we kind of assume that that must be the way God acts. Oh, that must be the same as how God looks at us. But guys, please notice that this isn't the God that David served, is it? That is not that God. And it's not the God that we serve either. No matter how far David had gone, no matter how deceptive and ruthless David had become, did God give up on him? No. Did not turn his back on him. God rescued him from his mess even when David had no interest in repenting and turning back to God. God took the first step here. Not David. We would have given up on David, guys. I know he's the hero from the Bible, so we all think, no, David, he would have figured it out. It would all turn out okay. No, if you and I were there watching what David was doing, slaughtering all the men, women, and children in these villages simply so he could keep his deception afloat, you and I would be going, oh my gosh, this is not a man after God's own heart. I say, let God waste him. Let God get, you know, jettison him. That's what you and I would have probably been thinking. But God did not give up on David. Are you not thankful that God is nothing like you and I? Please hear me again on this, guys. No matter what you have done, no matter how far from God you have run, God will not give up on you. He will not. God himself says in Hebrews 13:5, I will never leave you, nor forsake you. Does it not say that? Absolutely. So, even when we are faithless, God does not withhold his love and kindness to us. He also, by the way, will not withhold his discipline. Okay, so don't just think, oh, hey, I got a free ticket to do whatever I want here. No, God is also loving to his children, so he disciplines them. As I said a little bit ago, we're going to see that in chapter 30, and it is painful, okay? But even God's discipline of us when we are backslidden does not change the fact that he will never leave us nor forsake us. I love the fact that when I was a little kid, as much as I hated getting spankings, and I got more than my fair share of them, never at any point in the process of or after getting a spanking did I think, oh, my mom and dad are going to leave me now. They're going to abandon me now. I've gone too far. They don't love me anymore. That never crossed my mind. And with our Heavenly Father, that should also never cross our mind. Yeah, he's going to discipline. He is going to be faithful to rescue. He's going to be faithful to discipline, to do the work in us that will refine us and make us more and more like Jesus Christ and less like little sheep hopping fences looking for mud. Okay? But he will never leave or forsake us. Thank goodness that God is not like us. Amen? Would you pray with me? Father, thank you for tonight. Thank you for your word.